Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday morning, everybody. This is Scott Smith, and he's down, out, and dirty. We got some things to talk about this morning. We just can't seem to get right. We got multiple issues going on in our country and in our city and our state and even the world, but we ain't going to have time to talk about it all today, but there are certain issues we keep fighting the same fights over and over and over again. This past week, we've seen the state of Texas pass one of the most draconian anti-abortion bills we've seen since Roe versus Wade, where you got the state of Texas putting bounties out for women who may go choose to exercise their rights over their bodies. This is the same state that is also attempting to suppress voter rights in ways that we've not seen since Jim Crow. We've got multiple issues that keep seem to be forming themselves back up and over and over and over and over again. It's like every 10 years. We are seeing these fights show up, and now we're seeing it like it shows back up every 2 years that we're fighting something after each and every election where the right is continuously trying to just put their boot in the back of the American people's neck. We see in the city of Atlanta, well, it seems we're on a wash and repeat cycle when it comes to corrupt politicians. We keep wanting to put the same people back in place that do the same crappy shit over and over again. And it's crazy. We see the fact that in America we have COVID-19 going on. We are rinse, wash, and repeating that whole thing about masks and social distancing. And it's just not a right-wing situation. We got some on the left who are just not getting it. There is a freaking pandemic going on. And then as every election cycle, and I keep preaching on this, I keep pushing on it, I keep hauling about it because this affects me probably more than anything else, is how we continue to ignore the black male voter. And that's where I'm going to start, because as we go through all of this, I promise you, you'll see the connection of how we continue the same fights over and over again, starting off with this piece of foolishness. Earlier this week, I had the privilege and honor of being able to be on Atlanta Live Broadcast Radio on WALK 1380 with Robert Petillo, as he was doing, he was filling in for Derek Bozeman. And we were talking about the GOP and the fact that they're putting black faces on a lot of different races. You know, in the governor's race, we have Vernon Jones. Herschel Walker has jumped into the it seems like he's getting ready to jump in to go after Reverend Raphael Warnock in the election that is going to be taking place on next year. And we talked in depth about how this is a fight for the black male vote. The black male voter is the largest swing element in the American electoral system right now. And everybody on the left is attempting to run from that reality. Let me say that again. Everybody on the left is attempting to run from that reality. And it puts us in a very precarious position. Because what we see is that the Democratic Party and those who are democratically adjacent are looking for votes in other areas so that they don't have to compromise with a more conservative-leaning African-American male population who shares at least 80% of the values with the Democratic Party, but because of 20% that we have a contentious disagreement about, or we have questions that nobody really wants to answer from us, that they are seeking to find other voters. And you see outreach toward the Latin population and the Asian American population in an effort to make up for what they see as a diluting black male loyalty to the Democratic Party, which there's no lack of loyalty here. We just have a, from our end, we just feel like the Democratic Party is ignoring us. And when you ignore somebody, they start looking for their options. And the Democratic Party's tent is large enough that we could very well accommodate everybody who shares an 80% agreement with us on the majority of our platform. But that is not what's happening. And so we continuously find ourselves, because we want to run from the black male voter, we keep finding ourselves in the same fights over and over and over and over again. It's wash, it's rinse, wash, and repeat. The same fights over and over and over again. I know back when they passed when Georgia passed the heartbeat bill, you had black men saying, well, why don't y'all engage some men in this conversation? I mean, I understand very well that this is a woman's reproductive issue, but men play half of the equation in this because a woman doesn't get pregnant by herself. There are men involved in each and every last one of those situations. There's male DNA involved. So how can we educate men to get into this fight and make it easier for our sisters to push back? If we have more men that are willing to vote against politicians who hold these type of views, then it makes it a lot easier. But so many people attempt to walk around us because there are questions that men have that they want to ask, and some of those questions are quite uncomfortable. Some of them are hard to answer. Some of them you just want to ignore right off the bat. Because, you know, there was at one point in time, they was talking about charging, they were talking about child support for the fetuses before birth. Oh, I promise you, men don't like that idea. That is something that they, you know, you don't want to, you really want to have a discussion about. But nobody attempted to bring us to the table, even a small method. And again, the black male vote is the largest male voting bloc in the Democratic Party. It would have made sense to get them on board. But nobody wants to talk to us. Nobody wants to talk to us about anything but criminal justice reform. And that's about the limit of it. Because, see, for some reason, everybody thinks black men are the only folk to go to jail in the United States. Wonder why. mainstream media. You know, left and right both push that narrative. You know, the black male boogeyman. Hell, y'all still got America more scared of us than y'all do of white supremacy. And that's what you need to be scared of. But that's just the tip of the iceberg because of the fact that we will not engage our whole electorate in all of our fights. We pick and choose which troops we're going to need on the front line. And right now, you need everything. You don't have the order of battle includes every asset we have. We don't have time to be attempting to carve out this group because we got a contentious conversation going on over here about certain issues that nobody wants to talk about, that the social engineering that is attempting to take place on the left is going to get us screwed up. We need an America that works for everyone, not just, you know, who we perceive to be winning the oppression Olympics at the time, because all of us are being oppressed in some form or fashion. Even white people, they don't even realize that they're being oppressed by an oligarchy. And that makes you, that is making you believe that you are part of their cool kids club when they're using you as the foot soldiers to put the boot in the back of everybody else so that they can continue to dominate all of our lives and keep us at a certain level while giving you the illusion that you one day could be one of them. So you say, Scout, really? That's where you're going with that? Yeah, really, that's where I'm going with that. Because at the end of the day, that is where the rubber meets the road. Who's voting for who? As we talked on that show on last Tuesday, and I had not realized that during the 2020 election that 20% of black men, 20% of black men, let me say that again, 20% of black men voted for Donald Trump. It actually went up from 2016. And, you know, we talk about our Democratic victories, but let's be honest with ourselves. Those were shoestring victories. We cannot afford to lose anybody else. And to be honest with you again, even though that the Latin population in the United States is outpacing that of African Americans, they are yet to outpace us when it comes to voting. The population does not vote yet. So you're worried, and then when they do, it is a 50-50 chance that they will vote Republican. I don't know if any of y'all ever worked with your Latin brothers and sisters out there, but there's a lot of conservative, traditional family value things that are going on. I'm not against traditional family values, but they have a tendency to want to put inside the manufacturing facility that I worked in for the last 5 years and the one that I worked in the 10 years before that. I have a tendency to watch Latin men, and they like being white adjacent. They emulate white supremacist culture. Look at who is the poster child of Hands Up, Don't Shoot, Zimmerman. Even though Zimmerman is a Latin man, he's a Latin man. If you look at some of the folks that are leading the Proud Boy effort, they're white-looking Latin men. We got Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz being some of the most virulent conservatives in the United States. So that population cannot necessarily be seen as consistently voting in our favor. Then we look at the Asian American population, which is relatively small in comparison to the rest of the major minority groups, they fall in the same category. They vote 50-50 when they do vote. Now, there's a lot of cultural reasons based on some of the countries that some of these people come from when it comes to voting. Now, black folk, regardless if they are African-Americans, as in terms of American descendants of slavery, or what we call foundational blacks, or, you know, black folks who have been here for 7, 8 generations. And even in the African immigrant population, when they come here and they get citizenship, they usually register to vote and become very politically active. And during that political activity, they usually join the Democratic Party. So the question begs, why are we as Democrats continuing to chase a whole different demographic than one that seems to want to play ball with the Democratic Party versus some people that are 50, that are going to play a 50-50 game with us? Why? Because nobody respects the black man. We can't get it right. We rinse, wash, and repeat. They lie to us during an election cycle. Tell us we're going to get this, that, and the other. We believe you. We go out and vote. Now, I'm not saying that I want to be a Republican, because that ain't happening. And for the most part, other folks don't want to happen either. So though what you have happening is that instead of going to vote for the Republican Party, you got large swaths of black men that are just going to sit there behind at home. We need them people to vote. Those people can help us increase margin. Now, you talking about increasing margins 1 or 2%. We need to do more than 1 or 2% that we got in the Latin and Asian population. We need to get black folks fully engaged in the game, not just black women, but black men too. Because if you don't, think about this in Georgia. We really ran a 50+1 campaign here. We need that to at least be 56%, 57%, not 50% plus one vote. Because that's basically how we got Georgia, was 50% plus one vote, from Biden all the way to the Senate race. And we lost seats in the legislature. We lost them. So how is that strategy working for us? Seriously, how is it working for us? Because as we progress in this conversation, let's then talk about COVID-19 and black folks, black male voters. You got some of the most hotepish, anti-vaccine, non-mask wearing folks on the left being with us. But we not willing, we cannot communicate effectively with these people, because they don't trust us, because we've been ignoring them for so long, and every time you come talk to us about something, it's like, what you want, and how is it going to hurt me? Why am I going to let you hurt me? These are the questions that are asked on a regular basis. Like, you want something from me, but it's going to hurt me, so tell me how it's going to hurt me. You know, if the pain ain't that bad, I might be willing to be down with you, because I do realize that the rest of the stuff y'all trying to do actually is some good stuff, and that's what we need to be tending towards. But we're sitting in the midst of a pandemic where we cannot get people to understand that there is no going back to normal. There is no going back to normal, not for the foreseeable future. We are forever going to be scarred by this because of the way we handle COVID-19. And I talk about this all the time to anybody that will listen to me. If we had a shutdown for 3 weeks, back in March of last year, we could very well be back to what we used to see as normal. But we made it seem like our whole world would just absolutely collapse if we didn't take our asses to work for 3 weeks. And people say, well, how would that have happened? We just spent billions of dollars over 20 years in Afghanistan. We moved in like a two-week period over close to 150,000 individuals in the biggest airlift that ever took place in U.S. military history. And you tell me that we couldn't shut down for 3 weeks? We don't have the logistical capability of doing that? The only people that would have needed to have been on the street were first responders in the military. And the military whole purpose would have been to do one thing. Make sure folks can eat. Because that was the only thing that was needed. Make sure folks can eat and make sure infrastructure stayed up and running. The military could have very well had went in and handled operating power plants. Or if the people who needed to handle the power plants, they could have quarantined on spot. But we make it seem like America just couldn't, there was no ability to sacrifice. If you worked at Georgia Power or whatever power generator you have in your part of the country, the United States military could have set you up enough meals ready to eat, bathroom facilities, and this, that, and the other for you to make sure that the power plants kept up and running. The hospitals did need the site. Everybody just stayed in place. All we had to do was plan for it. Yes, there was children that needed to be taken care of. We could have made a plan for that. It needs to be a plan made for it now if it's not already there. 3 weeks, it would have been hard. Some of y'all would have lost your mind just a little bit. But it would have been better than this slow bleed that we got going on. We hit it, get it out. Boom, get it done. But now we've been dragging this thing out for almost 2 years. We have a situation in which we have a housing crisis that is looming. Even though unemployment is falling, there's masses. We actually have a reverse situation where we have more jobs than we have people. Because people are literally scared to go back to work. Because our leaders are incompetent. Nobody's willing to die for your low wages. And bad treatment. I left my job earlier this year to go into business for myself. Because it was the only way I seen that I could be able to continue to work and make money and have a little bit more control over my own environment. Because my employer did not really care about COVID. They did and they didn't. I can say one, it was a really, really... There was one of my bosses who was really, really scared of the shit. I can sit there and tell you that for a reason. I'm not gonna lie on him. He was scared of it. But I got another one who got the shit, came back, caught COVID, came back and still act like nothing didn't happen. And would actually sit there and demean you as a human being because you were worried about it. And then just the way we were overall treated as human beings in that facility. It was just like, get it done. Let's get it made. Let's make it. Let's make it. Let's make it. Let's work, 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 work. They attempted to start increasing pay. But at the end of the day, you can give me all the money in the world, and if I'm dead, who's spending it? And Pete, that's how people are feeling. And because we fail to address the mental side of living through a pandemic. And that mental stress will be alleviated if we just got rid of the incompetent policies that continue to put people's lives at risk, that keep a breeding ground for this virus to keep mutating. We're dealing with a Delta run through right now, but I've seen the Greek letters Lambda and Mu in terms of COVID. Now, we know that Delta is 9 times more virulent than the Alpha that we all dealt with in the beginning. So, meaning that whereas you might could infect one or two people, it was a one-on-one, almost a one-on-two thing about infecting people with the original COVID strain. Now, one person can infect 9 people. And that's even if you have vaccines. The vaccine is going to keep the vast majority of us from dying. Okay? It makes it harder for the virus to kill us. We've learned that it does not keep you from catching it, and it does not keep you from carrying it. So you can be vaccinated and be a carrier. Now, that's fine if you're hanging around a bunch of vaccinated people and y'all get to passing it amongst each other. Then it really doesn't matter. But as long as the vaccine has non-vaccinated hosts to be able to go through, then it continues to mutate. Because as more people get sick, build up antibodies, it is the job of this virus to figure out how to survive. How you stop it from surviving is you stop it from spreading. Now, we just can't lock ourselves down. We can attempt to, but most of us can't. Because we now got to go out here and try to make whatever money we can make to be able to afford. Like I said, there's a housing crisis getting ready to hit because the eviction moratorium is being rolled back. Funds have not made it into the hands of people to be able to pay landlords, and landlords are feeling skittish. There are going to be people, way more people than we think are going to fall through the cracks on this. In a way, I can tell you what the mindset is, because we could just pay the landlord and send the money directly to them and made them feel okay about this when we were giving stimulus checks. If you're a landlord or whatever, we give you an extra stimulus check over a certain amount of time to make sure that you can let your people live in shelter in place and you can maintain your property. We could have done that. We could have passed laws in this country from a federal level and even at local levels to put freezes on housing costs. We could have kept rent from rising. We could have actually forced rent to decrease if we wanted to. Yes, we could have. Is the political will there for that? No, it isn't. There's a lot of different things we can do, but we can't seem to break certain paradigms in our head about how this economy is going to work. So as you're going to have people, and then even with the rising wages, because of the so-called labor shortage that has showed up because of the continuing pandemic, we also have inflation. So even though more money is being paid to you, you're still kind of sort of putting out the same type of money. Because your rent is going up, food is getting more expensive. So nobody's put any price controls in place so that people could possibly start saving money. So we're going to continue to fight that fight. And what's going to happen is that we got bubbles, financial bubbles, economic bubbles that are forever expanding. the people who have been making profit run off of the forever war and now the pandemic, thinking that these profit runs are going to last indefinitely, or they're trying to do as much as they can to shore up everything before the bubble busts. And when the bubble busts, what are we going to do? Because we've already stimulated the economy to a point that we really can't afford any more stimulus. Do y'all hear what I just said? We stimulated the economy to a point that we really can't afford any more stimulus. We just can't, at this present rate, continue to throw more money at the situation without putting some type of regulatory constraints on the economy. And people, you probably have economists that will tell you that is not possible, but the economy is a man-made human construct. And that means that very smart people can get together and do very smart things to keep stupid things from happening. So, as we continue to deal with this ongoing pandemic, and we realize that there are things that our government could do and should do, it comes back to asking the question of who are the people who can get it done? And we found out it is easier for certain things to take place at your local government level, at your municipality. And the municipalities, without, when there's no interference from state government, have a tendency to do really good work. So the question is, who do we elect? Well, here in, we have elections going on here in the city of Atlanta. Yep, yep, we got Atlanta city elections. We got elections going on all over the state of Georgia, municipal elections. And we have the city of Atlanta. And we have Kasim Reed running for mayor again. Really? Really? And the thing is, he's leading in the polls. And I don't think people realize how much damage Kasim Reed has done to the city of Atlanta on a lot of different levels. Because now the business community, I'm sure, loves Kasim. Because on that level, he has done an excellent job of making sure that businesses come to Atlanta and take advantage of everything Atlanta has to give. But there's a cost. And the cost has been to the least of them in the city. We have a demographic shift that is going to make it untenable for us to be able to maintain the political structure that a lot of us Atlantans are very proud of. And it is pushing people out who've lived here for decades, generations, are being pushed out of their own city. Gentrification is taking place, and the city leaders are using it as a line in the sand of us versus them, when it's a The us versus them isn't a black or white thing. It's a us versus them in a class situation. It is the have versus the have not. And I know there are people who are very proud to be able to buy their $500,000 homes in the city of Atlanta. $500,000 homes that 5 years ago were worth $60,000, $70,000 that were normally, nominally African-American communities that nobody wanted to invest in. We didn't put any money into them whatsoever. Now, as I ride around the city and I go into the parts of the city that are gentrified, I see road work going on, potholes being filled, infrastructure being taken care of. As I ride into the more black part of the city, not seeing as much as that. But yet they want, black leaders want to keep the black rule, but yet continuously propping up a situation that's going to a limit and it's sooner or later become going to cause black leadership in Atlanta to become extinct. Now I'm supporting a candidate. I'm actually working for a candidate in the city of Atlanta right now, Doug Williams. He's a white guy. And he gets it. He wants to work, make a city that works for everyone. Not just the elites, but the folks who've not yet benefited from the greatness that is the economic engine that is the city of Atlanta. And we have a housing crisis that is going to hit the city of Atlanta. We got a pandemic that is ravaging the city. We got infrastructure problems that we've actually got the money, or at least they have raised the money to fix it, but haven't done it yet. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, see, a lot of folks think you pick up the phone, you call 911, and that you automatically get it, and you're used to you getting the right people. But Atlanta has some very unique situations. Like, if you live in Atlanta, and you happen to live in the part of Atlanta that's on the east side of Moreland Avenue, you happen to be in the county of DeKalb instead of the county of Fulton, which the vast majority of the city sits in. And so when you call 911, you don't get Atlanta 911. You get DeKalb County 911. Now, DeKalb County 911 has an ongoing agreement to make sure that they stay on the line while they transfer you so you don't get lost. So there's a clean handover from DeKalb County to the city of Atlanta. Now, there are technological fixes that exist today that make that really easy to do. Because most of you know, you want DoorDash or you want Uber to come or Amazon to drop off a package, and they can locate you on your phone within 10 feet of where you're standing. You can get a pizza delivered to you in the park without an address because of the location on your phone. But 911 in the city of Atlanta can't handle that. Most 911 systems in the city, in the state, can't handle it. There's a couple of cities in the state. Atlanta's not the only one that crosses county jurisdictions. You have West Point, Georgia, carries across two counties, Troop and Harris. You got Warner Robins. I think it's Peach and Houston. And there's maybe a couple of other tanks that cross county lines. So the state has been working on a fix that costs $30 million that's going to take place. They just hadn't approved it yet. But the federal government has a program in which the city just asks the cell phone providers for the data that they have to be able to provide you the ability to do it in 90 days. All the city has to do is have the software to interface with. Now, this is an ongoing problem. The city of Atlanta has known about this problem for quite some time. They even instituted a tax that you can see on your sewer bill to fix it. And it has not been fixed yet. And in our estimates, that raises about $10 million a year. And this has been going on, from what I understand, since like 2012. So the state system costs 30. And since 2012, you've been raising close to, you know, a couple of million dollars. It's already that we didn't have to get rid of the city of Atlanta them raising enough money to pay for the state plan, plus they own stuff. Why hasn't it gotten done yet? Why in the city of Atlanta are the citizens responsible for the sidewalk outside of their house, which is in the city's right-of-way? So if you want it fixed, you got to fix it. And the city can also, and the city can even, you know, do like code enforcement stuff against you for stuff in their right of way, and it gives you and it costs you money. So what's going on? Why is it that the parks, other than the brand new park that they just built, trying to say, oh, look what we did. Why are the parks looking like shit when there's money for that? But yet in Atlanta, you want to continue to elect the same group of people or the same types of people who have the same answers regurgitated over and over again. And the only difference between some of them is they're changing uniforms, but they're not changing the team's performance. And y'all keep falling for the same sucker shit over and over and over again. You're electing people because they're black. You're electing people because they're women. You're electing people because they're LGBTQ+. But you're not electing people based on the fact, will they, can they, and have a desire to get the job done. That is the biggest problem we have today, is that we keep electing people for the wrong reason. And we find ourselves rinsing, washing, repeating, and fighting the same fights over and over again. Something that my candidate, Doug Williams, likes to call the Great Southern Boondoggle. You've actually heard another politician talk about the Great Southern Boondoggle. Jason Carter talked about it in 2014. He got the idea from Doug Williams. Doug Williams wrote a whole essay on it. And Jason Carter picked it up and used it. So basically what it says is that in the South, we have a government that chooses not to work, to the point that you believe that it cannot work, so therefore your expectations drop. You don't expect for the government to work for you. So all you're going to get is crumbs and trinkets to make you feel better, but you're not going to get what you want because they've made it almost impossible for you to get what you want because they've got you to believe that it is impossible, but it's not. All it takes is for good people to get together and do the work. And if they're led by the right people, then they will do it. Because sometimes it takes a leader just to show you what you can do. You know, we got leaders like Michael Thurman here in DeKalb County. here in Georgia, in DeKalb County. Michael Thurman is one of those guys who always got me. And if he figured it, if he realized he made a mistake, he goes back and he fixes it. Because sometimes people just give you bad advice. But when he realizes that, he fixes it. And you got good men like Jim Thornton, Mayor of LaGrange. That he's probably one of the people that I would mention that is nominally a Republican. But to me, he is probably the most progressive mayor in the state of Georgia. He's the head of the Georgia Municipal Association. My adopted hometown of LaGrange, Georgia, has thrived under his leadership. And he listens. And he goes out and he's responsive. Everybody, not just Republicans, not just white folks, but black folks and Democrats alike. Because he wants the city of LaGrange to live up to its title of being America's greatest little city. We have a project down in LaGrange very similar to the Beltline in Atlanta. Called the Thread. The Thread is better than the Beltline, or it's going to be better than the Beltline. Now, we don't have a need for light rail in LaGrange, but we have a need for people to be able to move across the city by foot and bike because, yeah, we have a little traffic problem in America's greatest little city. There ain't 40,000 of us down there, but we have a tendency to all want to go down Vernon Road at the same time. And people are starting to get hip to the fact that our city is small enough to be walkable and rideable on bicycles. So let's connect all the places we need to be or we want to be by trails that keep people off the road and make things better. You know, so there's examples of it working. There's examples of leaders that go into their communities and pull the best out of their people. But we have gotten lazy, America. Georgia, we've gotten lazy. Atlanta, we've gotten lazy. We want to sit back, make money, and let other people make decisions for us. And then we sit back and complain when it hit our pockets. Because then they get comfortable and figure out, we need some more money. Where are we going to get it from? They're coming for you. They're going to get your money. They're going to figure a way to seize your home. They're going to figure a way to push your grandmama out of her house so that they can get her out of there and take her house and then turn it around, flip it. They're going to give you $100,000 because that's going to be more money than you've ever seen in your life. The developer going to turn around. We're going to put a fresh coat of paint on your grandmama's house. Going to fix the steps, update the bathroom. And then sell it to somebody for $500,000. And you think you did something. Well, you just kept that house. And over the next 2 or 3 years, put a fresh coat of paint on your grandma's house. Fix her ragged ass steps that y'all just walk up every time y'all go over there for Sunday dinner because she's still cooking for all y'all lazy ass. Because y'all ain't taking grandma no food. Y'all still going over there eating grandma food. Go in there, update her bathroom because all of y'all got some fly bathrooms. Y'all know y'all live out there in Stonecrest and Grayson. Y'all out there in Douglasville. Y'all down there in Fayetteville. You know, you over in Brookhaven, got fancy bathrooms, and your grandmama's got them. You sit on her toilet still, her toilet rocking, because the flow under it weak. You could go over there and take some money and fix grandmama's house up. Keep it in the family. That's how we build wealth, people. So if you kept grandmama's house and her, and sister house and Uncle Junebug house and you know, Cousin Clara House, and everybody was just to keep all the houses in the city of Atlanta, we could build some wealth. Because, shoot, the evaluation on that house is still going to go up. Shoot, you can take out a loan on the house, start businesses, pay the mortgage off. You know, if nobody want to live in it, put an Airbnb in that joker. Rent it out. Don't sell it. Maybe you move back into the city, because now those are the chic areas. They have Starbucks and Whole Foods. Bike trails. They wearing Birkenstocks. Wi-Fi everywhere. And you closer to your job downtown, because you know all of y'all work for the government. Everybody who lives in Fayetteville and Stonecrest and Grayson and all y'all know y'all state employees. You could be that. You could be 15, 20 minutes from Sloppy Ford. 10, 15 minutes from the state capitol. 10, 15 minutes from Lima City Hall. 10, 15 minutes from the Fulton County Administrative Building. And for those of y'all who are still doing corporate gigs downtown, you 15, 20 minutes without traffic from the Coca-Cola building. You know, you're not far from AT&T headquarters. You know, you can get over there to Wells Fargo, Atlanta headquarters. You're not that far from Atlantic Station. You're not that far from y'all, those of y'all who work down there at Grady. But you spend 2 hours in your car every day trying to get from Stonecrest. You could be living in that nice house, do it yourself, in the city. Living in the city. Building some wealth. Because grandmama already owned the house. When y'all wait for grandma to kick off, y'all can go sell it so y'all can buy a bigger house further out that you got to spend more gas to get back to your job. You can go back into these neighborhoods and start a business. You can take grandmama's recipes. Instead of selling her house, take her recipes and open up a restaurant. She's been feeding them. She's been feeding the hood all this time. CA. Name it after grandma. Name it after Aunt Clara. Start a barbecue joint. Name it after Uncle June. But that ain't what we do. We continue to elect people like, we continue to talk about electing people like Kasim Reed, who's screwing us. We keep electing folks at Atlanta City Council that say, screw DeKalb County, we're going to put us our police training facility in your county where you don't have no say about what we do. And only because now people like Doug Williams and other community activists are saying, hey, Atlanta, that ain't right. These people are our neighbors. We don't want them doing it to us. Let's have y'all need to have a conversation with them. And be okay with whatever these people decide. Because they might be okay with this training facility. They just need to be talked to. They can get something they want out of it. But people don't like letting black folks have a voice for themselves. That goes back to the original point made, connected and members of black male voting. People don't like us having voices for ourselves, you know. And the thing is, when you give a voice to the person that you take the voice from the most, then you find out that everybody has the capability of speaking. But as long as you suppress one voice, you have the ability to suppress others. And then as long as people feel like they have the right to suppress it, then they start talking about what they can do with your body. And then they put bounties on your body, like they did in Texas. And then people feel that they can just spread their germs to you because that's their right.
they're free. I can give you Delta. Because I'm free. I don't care nothing about you. All I want is what I want. This is America. This is America. This is America. Boy, I wish I had that song queued up right now. I ain't listened to it in a while. Childish Gambino, that was my song in 2018. That was my summer song, This is America. Childish Gambino. But you know, if I cue that up, I'd be in violation of copyright law. So, but take and hit it up, listen to it. Y'all know how to go YouTube it. Childish Gambino, This is America. Watch the video. The video is a lot more insightful than the song. Because he needed to do a remix and then throw some masks in the song instead of guns. He needed some masks and some virus stuff going on in there. You hear me, Childish Gambino? I know you out there acting and all that stuff now, but you might want to do This is America Part 2, dealing with some pandemic type stuff. Yeah. You know, that's how we do it here, though. We can't get it right. We rinse, wash, and repeat, fighting the same old fights. There's no critical thinking taking place. Our leaders aren't thinking about us, so we need to replace them. We need to replace them with the character that we wouldn't normally replace them with. We need people who are showing results today, not people who are promising us what they're doing tomorrow. Because every time somebody promises us what they're going to do tomorrow, and we're all guilty of this. We are all guilty of this. Again, let me say, we are all guilty of this. We have a tendency not to keep our promises. We have good intentions. But shit happens. And that even goes for politicians. You get in the office. You promise stuff one that you find out that you really can't do. Because you never really did check into what you were promising and how you could keep that promise. It's just like we promise people in our lives every day that we're going to do stuff, not realizing that we may be incapable of doing it. Something may come along that will stop the fight. So you do what you can do. You do what you can do. And I'm sitting here thinking of a saying that a relative who passed on to glory used to have. I'm trying to think of it in my head. And it deals with doing what you got to do. And I doggone it, and I hear it in the back of my head, but I cannot get it out of my mouth. And I was just talking to my mama about it the other day. And I know, I wish that was one of my Smith cousins would listen right now, could just type it into the chat for me. I wish one of y'all was listening. Because I'm trying to remember what Uncle Herbert always said. Do what you can while you can. I think that is what it is. Do all you can while you can. So right now is your opportunity. You got things you can do right now. You don't have to wait till you are elected to do it. Do it right now. Do like Doug. That's why I did Doug. Do all you can while you can right now. Don't wait. This even goes for the average citizen. Get more involved in the processes, particularly the folks in Atlanta, because the way the government of Atlanta is set up, excuse me, the way the city of Atlanta's government is set up, it is set up for government to have input from its citizens. Because, see, the way the Atlanta government is set up, you got the way we call neighborhood planning units, MPU. It was something great that Maynard Jackson came up with when he was first elected back in the office the same year I was born, the year of our Lord, 1973. Can I get a shout out to 73? He came up with this thing called the Neighborhood Planning Unit, the NPU. Every neighborhood in Atlanta is separate, is subdivided into an NPU. And another great thing about the city of Atlanta, they have neighborhood organizations. So I know that this is one of the things that I've just got me, and I do love about the way the city of Atlanta is structured, if it is properly used, is that like each one of the neighborhoods have at least two or three organizations that is dedicated to making sure that the neighborhood is functioning. So like in Eastlake, you got the Eastlake Neighborhood Association, and then you got Eastlake, you got East Atlanta, and then you got, you know, Oakhurst, and you got Kirkwood, and you got Edgewood, and you got Reynolds Town, and you got Cabbage Town, you got Old Fourth Ward, you got Sweet Auburn, which is, I think, is Sane, and you got Grant Park, and all these different neighborhoods, and they elect presidents and boards, and they sit together, they get together once a month, and they have meetings. And the citizens come in and say, hey, we want this. And then those same citizens go to the NPU meeting, which two or three of them neighborhoods might make up the NPU. And then the NPU actually can put out permits for building and can come up with vision plans on how they want their community to look. And the government has to do what the NPU puts out. They have some power. But the city of Atlanta's government, particularly under folks like Kasim Reed, don't like you having a say. They don't like it. They don't want you doing that. Because then you might cause a developer to have to spend a little bit more money to make something look like you want it to look like in your neighborhood, instead of people from the outside coming in and dictating to you what they're going to give you. They want to take away your say. And they've done it for the most part by trying to weaken it by making it really difficult to get things done. But sometimes you just got to stand and fight. And you got to sometimes say in your head, oh, and I know this is Sunday morning. But sometimes you got to sit back and say, I don't give a damn what that motherfucker think about me. This my neighborhood. This my street. You can catch this smoke. You can get these political hands. Politics is warfare with our bloodshed. And we're going to sit here, we're going to fight. We're going to not vote you back in the office if you get to playing with my money. You got to get hood with it. You ain't going to let nobody step on your fresh tennis shoes. They white and leave a scum mark on them without you folks catching them hands. You ain't going to let nobody come up on you and on your block, knock you off your square and take your money. You ain't going to let that happen. You'll fight a regular boy on the street and get sent to jail when you have a legal right to fight these jokers back. You got a legal right. You got legal organs and institutions and infrastructure that is there that allow you to legally have your voice and make some stuff happen. So leave the stupid stuff on the block. Get your behind to your NPU meeting, your neighborhood organization Zoom call. Find out what's going on. Sit back and listen for a while, because if you're new, you don't know shit. Listen for a while. Find out what's going on. Figure out who the power players are. Do some power mapping. Then you organize. Then there's going to be an election at the neighborhood level, at the NPU level, at the city council level. There's going to be an election. Woo-wee! Then we get to vote. Woo! we, and then after we done organized and we vote, we get some leadership up in there that's going to do some things. Ooh, we, can I get a witness? That's how we get right, folks. That's how we end. And see, then we can come up to a new wash, rinse, wash, and repeat. Organize. Join, organize, vote, get something done. Because I'm going to tell you, as a black man who is a native of the city of Atlanta, yes, I was born in the city. It is nothing that makes me more proud of the fact that we've spent the 47 years that I have been alive with leaders who look like me. But that is not good enough anymore, because if you ain't going to show out for me, show me why this is truly Black Mecca, because we can have a city where every sidewalk is fixed, every household looks good. We can have a city where people are prosperous. We've been told that we have a city with an economy the size of Norway. Norway is one of the most happiest countries on the face of the planet Earth. Why can't we be the same? Black folk, let's show out. Let's get some leaders up in there that's going to make it happen for us. And then at the same time, while it's happening for us, we make a city, an Atlanta that works for everybody. Can I get a witness? Amen. Yeah, y'all will make me preach. Y'all will make me preach. So that with that being said, I'm not going to hold y'all much longer. Y'all get the gist of it. We can't get right. We wash, we rinse, wash, repeat the same fights all the time. We don't learn anything. Nobody pays attention to the history. Nobody learns. We just get back and we get our butt whooped and we say we can't do nothing about it. So then we get along to get along. We go along to get along. We cannot continue to allow that to happen. So, I done been with y'all a little bit over an hour, and I said I wasn't going to hold it long today because, you know, just like you don't like getting in church and the preacher getting talking too long, I know y'all don't like Scott getting too long here on Down South and Dirt. So I'm going to get ready to take put this episode in the can. If you listen to it today live and you know you got folks who are sitting in the church, you know, wondering why you was sitting over there giggling, why you was in service or listening to your other service, why you got the screen split, you watching your pastor listen to me at the same time, because I know there are folks who do that. Take and pass the link along. And let some folks listen. Talk about it. Spread the word. This is Down South and Dirty. And we're out. Peace. Y'all have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Stay masked. Keep yourself distanced. Wash your hands. Keep some sanitizer in the car. Wear a mask. Get vaccinated. Stop free breathing till this is over with. Oh, yeah. One more thing. And if you're a candidate and you're running for office right now, and you still going out here knocking on folks' doors, I don't care how many masks you got. I don't care how distant you are from the door. Them folks didn't ask you to come to their house. Why are you taking germs at other people's door? If they want to talk to you, find a way that they can come to you to talk to you. That way you give them a choice. You give them a choice. Stop taking away people's choices. If you believe in choice, believe in that choice too. So I'm asking all of y'all to go into opt-in campaign. Take your folks off the door. It ain't worth you getting somebody sick or you getting sick yourself. And with that being said, this is Down South and Dirty. We out. We'll be right back.
Thank you.